Sick Boy Podcast is a health and comedy show about what it's like to be sick. Wait, is that right? How can illness be funny?
You'd be surprised.
Okay. Sick Boy is hosted by
me, Brian Stever.
And me, Taylor McGilvery.
And myself, Jeremy Saunders.
Come on in and join us to melt your heart, learn something fascinating, and bust a belly laugh. Trust us, you'll be glad you did.
You can find Sick Boy on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your pods.
This is a CBC podcast.
It can be a little bit hard to square two things. On the one hand, Nickelodeon TV shows brought so many people joy when they were kids. On the other hand, the reality of life on set was often quite grim for some of the kids involved in making those shows. Today on the podcast, a new documentary shows us that reality. I'm Al-Amin Abdul-Mahmoud. This is Commotion. All right, look, even if you were not a kid in the 2000s, maybe you know of these big Nickelodeon shows. We're talking about The Amanda Show, Drake and Josh, or iCarly. That's a theme song that you're listening to right now. These were the shows that everyone I knew was watching at the time, and they were just fun. Other kids my age loved them. I think they loved them because they weren't shows that were trying to teach you something, right? Like, they were just shows that you could just enjoy and hang out with, and they weren't afraid to be messy or silly, and that was what we got out of those shows. And I thought the major legacy of those shows was that they launched the careers of a lot of young stars. But now there's a new documentary, it's called Quiet on Set, that looks at what it was like behind the scenes of those beloved kids shows. I'm not going to lie to you, it is dark. A lot of that documentary is quite dark. There are allegations of sexual assault. There are allegations of toxic work environments, gender discrimination. This documentary, I think, raises some questions about the ethics of kids' TV and how to protect young people in Hollywood. We're going to unpack all of this with culture writer Saatchi Kaul and actor and director Michael Cedar. But just a heads up before we get going, some of what you're going to hear might be difficult for some listeners to listen to. Saatchi, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Saatchi, I'm going to start with you on this one. You were involved in the making of the documentary. The main character of the documentary is Dan Schneider. He became one of the most influential voices in children's entertainment over the course of his career. He was, you might call him Nickelodeon's golden boy behind the scenes. But, you know, we see in this documentary allegations of this toxic work environment from people who worked with him. Can you just tell us a little bit of what happened on his sets?
Yeah, I mean, the allegations around Dan Schneider really run the gamut from people who were in the writer's room, adults who worked on the production, all the way down to children who were working in production. So on the adult side, there was a lot of stuff around how he wasn't paying his female writers a livable wage. He made two female writers split one salary. There was a lot of sexual harassment. He asked child actors and adults in the writer's room alike to give him massages. Mm-hmm. On the children's side, there's a lot of talk around weird racist skits that some of these kids were asked to do, especially the Black kids who were on set. And also a lot of like weird innuendo jokes, like sexual innuendo jokes, a lot of touching of the child actors that they didn't seem to want. And then I think like what was really potent when I was looking at it were all of these digital shorts that a lot of these female actresses, these very young female actresses had to do, mm-hmm. where they're like kind of in these weird sexualized positions that are half masked by jokes. So like Ariana Grande trying to like massage a potato. Like, I mean, we're adults, like we know what's happening there, but for kids, they don't necessarily have a scale for what's going on. But it's so odd that this adult in the room was putting these kids in that position for years.
First, I want to mention, some people only might know Ariana Grande as a pop star. Ariana Grande was, you know, she's the Nickelodeon to pop star pipeline. She is the biggest representative of that. And second, I want to say, like, the thing that you just mentioned about these digital shorts, I'd never seen them until we were preparing for this conversation and our producer showed me them. And like, there was one where Ariana Grande is pouring water on her body.
She's like waterboarding herself upside down.
And it felt uncomfortable to watch because I think if you're just like above the age of 17, you know what is happening. And if you're younger than that, you might not necessarily know that. So like, it just felt very uncomfortable that the idea that like a major network would be like, sure, Dan Schneider, by all means, do this, shoot this for a digital exclusive or whatever.
Yeah, I think they were really kind of letting him run with a lot. And I mean, I think that a lot of the kids on set knew that this stuff was not appropriate and they didn't have the mechanism for saying anything.
Sure.
I talk about this in the doc that, like, if you're going to run a children's show and if you're going to deal with child actors, you need to make sure that the most vulnerable person on set, which is usually a child, feels abundantly comfortable to tell the most powerful person on set that she's not comfortable.
Yeah.
And that was not an environment, clearly, that was being made at Nickelodeon.
Michael, I want to ask you about your time on these sets, but first I got to acknowledge this is weird for me because we're roughly the same age, but I grew up watching you on my television. So it's weird, man. You were on the Zach Files and now you're here, which is I have to sort of reconcile these two facts, but I will get through it. But you tell me, because you've been on these sets since you were about 8 years old, did any of these stories come as a surprise for you?
I mean, first of all, Zach Files, that's a deep cut. Yeah.
Buddy, YTV day one, let's go. Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think in my experience and my peers, I don't know of any stories of this kind of assault, sexual misconduct and those types of things. I was very lucky to have a very good experience, and watching this documentary, which was very difficult, it made me really grateful that I was able to do one kid's show after another in Canada, but maintain this bit of normalcy in my life that I feel like doesn't exist in the American system. And I think it's a very hard environment for kids because there's a lot of pressure on them. There's definitely in my time, I think workplace safety was often an issue. I had a lot of really great showrunners who understood that they were dealing with kids. Doesn't mean an undue amount of pressure isn't put on them. I think that just sort of goes with the territory, and some kids are built for it and some aren't. And some are in a position where they can't just step away because they feel that they have the burden of keeping the family finances going. I know lots of kids who were like, you know what, this isn't for me, and they left. But other kids came from a socioeconomic background where they felt they had to do it.
Do you have any recollections of like some examples of being on set and other kids saying, "Yo, I don't know if I feel perfectly fine with what's happening here"?
Well, there was a show I was doing where there was a much younger character, and when we first started the show, she was 4 or 5, and she walked on a set, and it was the most brilliant thing because she's so tiny, but she knew what the job was. Yeah. She knew how to turn it on, and she was so good. But then a few years in, we're filming and we're sitting at the top of the stairs waiting to start a scene, and she just seems so glum all the time. I said, "What's going on?" She's like, "I just don't think I want to do this anymore." But on her behalf, a contract was signed. She had to show up for another season of the show, and she definitely came from a family that she was the sole breadwinner. Right. And she at this point is 7 years old, 8 years old, and already is feeling this pressure of, I have to do this or my family might not eat. And so that was really, really hard to witness. And I'm not really in a position where I can solve that problem for her. I'm all of 17.
Right. Of course. I mean, like this is, I think, what I got out of the parts of the documentary that I've seen, Saatchi's, like the idea of like how much pressure there is on these stars to just keep going, keep doing the show, regardless of what's happening sort of around them in the environment that they don't necessarily, you know, want to continue being in. A focal point of Dan Schneider's story is like his relationship with Amanda Bynes, right? And she's had a very public childhood and also a very public fall from the public eye. What does the documentary tell us about like what happened behind the scenes with her story?
Yeah, I think a lot of people for some reason think that Amanda's trouble started in her 20s when she was an adult, which is clearly not the case because it's so abundantly obvious that the environment on the Amanda show was really dysfunctional and the environment on her WB show once she got a little older was also dysfunctional. I mean, it's alleged that Dan Schneider was kicked out of that writer's room because he was so hostile to other people on set. their relationship is really odd. It seems like she kind of wanted him to help her get emancipated, which didn't actually end up happening. There's lots of weird footage of like them doing skits together. And it's clear that he's in charge. I mean, he's like EP, he's creator. Yeah. And he's writing these skits where they are in a hot tub together.
Yeah.
And there's lots of talk about like Amanda and his relationship. It was too close. She's giving him shoulder massages in the writer's room. I mean, this is outrageous behavior for a child to be engaged with.
Right. And like, again, I just want to remind people that like Nickelodeon had so much faith in Dan Schneider. Yeah. Like Dan Schneider in this particular era, in this particular time, could really do no wrong. And they just let him have however many freedoms he just kept on asking for because his shows were doing well. His shows are so popular with young people. One of the most powerful moments and really difficult moments of the series is when Drake Bell tells his story publicly for the first time about how he was repeatedly sexually assaulted by a dialogue coach from the sets of one of the Nickelodeon shows. I want people to listen to this, but first I want to just say, again, this might be kind of difficult to listen to. Let's hear it.
The abuse was extensive, and it got pretty brutal. I really don't know how to elaborate on that on camera, really. Why don't you do this?
Yeah.
Why don't you think of the worst stuff that someone can do to somebody as a sexual assault? And that'll answer your question.
Sachi, that part was so incredibly difficult to watch. What did his story tell us about the protections that did exist, if any at all, for young people on these sets?
Yeah, there are no protections. Children are not built to have these self-protective measures. There's evolutionarily, you don't get them until you're a lot older.
They're
there
children.
Are no protections. They're children.
That's what makes it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are children. And there is a reason why people tend to get away with things with kids, because kids are not built to actually say something. But, you know, to go back to what we were talking about before, I mean, these are kids who are also responsible for the economic futures of their entire families in a lot of cases. I mean, like, Elamine, you have a family, you have a wife, you have a child.
Yeah.
You have pressures as an adult. But yeah. You are, I think, like 65 years old.
I am.
So that's a reasonable thing for you as an adult to have to burden.
But
right?
Imagining my 7-year-old daughter carrying the mortgage is unfathomable.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And so how would you as a child be able to say something is happening? I know it's making me uncomfortable. There's a steady creep to abuse like this. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
There's no way to say I got to get out of here because you might be responsible for the mortgage.
I should say, since that show was premiered, we've seen Dan Schneider respond. I want to play you guys a clip of Dan Schneider responding. This is him on YouTube.
I can tell you why it hurts really bad for me. I remember very clearly my early experiences, my first experiences in the entertainment business. It meant the world to me that I was getting those opportunities. And I went in and I got lucky because they were great. And the fact that I didn't pay that forward to every employee that walked through my door, it hurts my heart. Because I should have. And I wish I could go back and fix that.
I don't know if that counts like as an apology. I don't think it does. But anyway, that's Dan Schneider speaking with one of his former actors about the series. It was published by The Hollywood Reporter. They said it was an exclusive, which was odd because they didn't actually have anything to do with staging the interview. It seemed like Dan Schneider himself is the person who produced this thing. Schneider has apologized for the behavior. He denied some of the allegations that came up in the documentary. Sachi, when you watched that, what did you make of his response?
I don't make anything of it. I'm so sorry to hear his heart hurt for 25 years of recorded behavior.
That's nothing. Nothing further to elaborate aside from.
I mean, bummer. Yeah. Like, where were you? Where were you?
Yeah, it's
a little unbelievable. You can't have it both ways. You can't say I am running the show and every decision goes through me and I am the mastermind behind it.
Yeah.
And then when things get complicated and when there are allegations around your behavior and the behavior of other people that you are saying you hired and you're responsible for, you don't then get to say, I had no idea. Either run it or don't. That's how this works. You either are responsible for it or you're not. Which one is it?
I appreciate this about you because you're like, yep, he made an apology and I don't have to make a single thing of it. I think that's a fair response.
Yeah.
Michael, when you saw the Dan Schneider video, I think it's like a 20-minute video of him sort of talking about this documentary. What did you have any response to it, sort of watching him revisit some of these allegations?
I haven't seen his response video other than that clip, but I've seen snippets of his responses over the last little while, and all of it seems pretty underwhelming. I mean, he seems to just say that, oh, I could have been a better boss. But it's also like, what were you writing? You know, like he put really twisted, messed up fetishes of his own into these programs, all the foot stuff, all of the, I don't know how I'm allowed to say ejaculation shots in faces.
You just did it. Yeah.
It's a lot. And you have to, like, if you're going to apologize, you need to own all of that and say, hi, I'm actually checking myself into a facility of some kind to deal with the fact that I think this is okay and probably turned him on, I have to assume.
I've never been as uncomfortable as I was watching some of those web extras. That's what you're referring to with like the foot stuff. It's like there's like one of those web extras.
I think it's in the main shows. It's the foot stuff's all over. It's all over.
It's in the main shows. Ejaculation stuff is in the main shows. Like this is stuff that like we weren't paying attention to because we were also children.
Yeah.
Why would we have any idea what was going on? It's for the adults to self-censor. Apparently they need to.
I have to say, go ahead. We had a similar shot in one of the first episodes of Life with Derek, which the fans talk about to this day. And my character and the other lead character, Casey, we get locked into a bathroom and we get into an argument, which becomes a tussle. And I grab a shampoo bottle and I spray her, and it is a white spray all over her face. Yeah. Now, I will say, it was not written specifically that way. It was, we get into a fight and I spray her, and it was also written by a woman. I don't think the intention was ever that.
Sure.
And I don't think with Dan shows, because they so consistently happen.
It's a consistency, right? Like that's the thing that sort of makes it in a different category.
We see all the time that weird things slip through the cracks. And I think everybody looking back at that scene in our show is like, oh, I see what that looks like.
Yeah.
I don't think we were conscious of it. And I don't think the producers were conscious of it at the time. But when you're continually using these same gags and so many different ones, the juicing a potato, like it's really vile.
I'm glad that you brought up the distinction between you. It's one thing to apologize for behavior. It's a whole other thing where she's just to say, look at the writing that you've done. Look at all the writing that you've done in the situation that you put children in. Sachi, I have literally 30 seconds left, but I'll just pose this question quickly to you. Where do you want to see things go from here for child actors on set, do you think?
There is no way to use child actors ethically. I don't think so. I mean, like you hear it from a lot of child actors themselves when they grow up that they have a tough time adjusting. I profiled Jeanette McCurdy. It's very clear that the child actor industry has affected her deeply and affected her family and affected how she is as an adult. Ron Howard did an interview the other day saying he wouldn't put his child, when Bryce was a child, he wouldn't put her into acting as a kid because he did it himself. He knows. It's across the board. I don't know how you do it. I don't want kids to not have programming for them, but it's unclear to me how we make this work. We can't even do this with adults without there being abuses of power. Of course it's going to happen with kids.
Okay, I can't not give Michael 30 seconds here to respond to that notion. So quickly, very quickly, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't entirely agree because I had a great experience. I know a lot of people who had great experiences. I do think that whether you're a child or an adult, as you were saying, that in these situations on sets, they're these small little places that it's really hard to voice concerns without it directly affecting you and or your family. Because there isn't an HR department on set where you can anonymously have these things spoken about and no one knows it came from you. They're going to know it comes from you. Is there a safe gap that could be put in where somebody from the union is specifically checking in with families and child actors and making sure that everything's okay? There could probably be more of that for sure. But it can be very damaging for some people. So I think it's kind of complicated, and I don't think you're ever going to not have child actors because shows have kids in them.
Okay. But I mean, okay. Now I'm like, we have to get a little bit further and deeper into this because now this sets up a dichotomy for me, which is to say I want children's entertainment to include children, right? Like I'm part of what makes it joyous is like looking at somebody who like looks a little bit roughly your age, Sachi, sort of in situations that are thrilling for you to watch. And I remember the joy that I got out of that. And I want to be able to protect that. But then you hear these stories over and over and over again of, you know, what is the level of protection you have to put in that gets around that problem that Michael just laid out, which is to say the HR department is going to know it came from you because you're the kid on the set. Is there a solve for that, do you think?
Well, I mean, what HR department? Like, yeah. I grew up watching The Amanda Show and I loved it and it was very important to me. I remember feeling like, wow, you can be like cool and funny and interesting and I loved it. But at what cost? Like, at what? She's on that show for how many years? At what cost? I mean, I just haven't, there hasn't been anything that's shown me that there is a structure or an institution that takes care of kids in this context. We see it with financial abuse. We see it with familial abuse. We see abuse on set. We see abuse behind the camera. It's all over the place. The entertainment industry is rife with abuses. Again, when it just deals with adults, of course, that's going to happen when you're dealing with an incredibly vulnerable population. I want to watch those things too, and I want them for my niece, but I have yet to see them be produced in a way across the board that's clean.
Michael, your work was primarily, as a young actor, was primarily in Canada. How would you say, like, that experience compared to, like, some of these experiences that we keep hearing about the young actors in Nickelodeon? Because I'm sure that you guys sort of interacted sometimes and talked about, you know, the differences in work in the industry here versus work there. Do you think that might be the difference between why you had just a few more protections than some of these Nickelodeon kids?
Yeah, I think it's hugely different. I could not have had the life I had I done what I did in the States. I, from middle school into my 20s, every year I did a season of a show, one show to the next. Wow. And if you're in the States and doing that, there is a press machine behind you. There's no way you're going to regular school. I didn't go to half of every year, but I did go to half of every year of school.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference of that. I had to go back to the hallways and get in trouble for being late on an assignment. And it really grounded me. And it also, it allowed me to have those adolescent years where I got to just grow up with my regular peers. And I think maybe it's part of needing a more like holistic approach to protections. Right now, there are protections of kids of a certain age need breaks every X amount of minutes or hours. Yeah. They have to do tutoring on set. But what does their whole year on year look like? And I think maybe that would help a lot, is not making it that a kid's entire life becomes this bubble, and living inside this machine that's just making money off them. And I think Canada in its own way is its own little bubble. We don't have a huge star system here. Mm. So usually when you're making these shows, it's not till after the show's done that you're even really aware that it was successful or that people were watching it. I mean, back then in the early aughts, when we're talking about with all these shows, there wasn't social media in the same way.
Sure.
So I really wasn't aware of the success of something like Life with Derek till really the show had sort of wrapped up. It was years into it before you're like, oh, this people really like this
Michael,
show.
Michael, hate to break it to you. That was a big show. It was a really massive, very, very successful show. I'm going to sit with that, I think. Like the idea that you couldn't have had the career that you've had if you were doing the same work in the United States, because I think that also tells us a lot. I have to leave it there, which is to, I don't feel good about that, because that's a complicated place to be, because my daughter, again, is 7 years old. You know, she's starting to watch some of these shows, and every time I watch a single scene from those shows, this conversation is going to be sitting right here on my shoulder. But in the meantime, Michael Sacchi, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Thank you so much. Michael Cedar is a director, producer, and actor from Toronto. Sachi Cole is a culture writer. You can watch her in the docuseries Quiet on Set. The first four episodes are available now in Canada on Discovery Plus.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We'll be right back. All right, so I'm going to play you guys a little bit of a song right now. I want to play you a bit of John Vinyl's Wasted because he's got a new album. It's called Heartbreak Hill. It is up for Contemporary R&B Recording of the Year at this year's Junos. By the way, the Junos are happening this Sunday in Halifax, and I'm going to be there. But let's listen to a bit of John Vinyl's Wasted. We're going out on that. My name is Alamin Abdul Mahmoud. Hey, I'm going to be back tomorrow. I would love to see you then.
In the morning, you don't see me leaving. Working on myself, but all you do is sleeping, and I don't. Waking up like every evening. Feeling like there's more to life. Girl, you got me mortified. Baby, all you do is test me. And maybe it isn't worth the stress.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.